also, you know, a lot of meetings, I've heard some of my clients say that their clients won't put the video on, and that allows people to multitask. So asking others, hey, can we put the video on so that we can have the best listening and communicating experience possible is a fine request to make.
You're listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Each episode, your host, author, and lawyer coach, Steve Fritzen, will take a deeper dive, helping you grow your law practice in less time with greater results. Now, here's your host, Steve Fritzen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Be That Lawyer. My name is Steve Fritzen. Welcome to the show. I hope everybody's doing well and staying safe out there. Just a reminder, if you haven't been to my website, fritzen.com, I have some great articles, videos, and access to my podcast where you can hear from great rainmakers and marketing and digital experts. That's, you know, the kinds of people I have on my show. And you're in for a treat today. I've got Regina Leslie of Regina Leslie Consulting, who's just an amazing presentation coach and someone that is actually been a good supporter of mine. I appreciate that. So how you doing, Regina?
I am well. How are you?
Good, good, good. It's good to see you and to hear from you. And obviously, I do limited justice to your bio. So do you want to go back in and give us a little Reader's Digest on that?
I can definitely give you the Reader's Digest version of that.
Thank you.
My mom and dad's version of the Reader's Digest. So my background involves a bit of a pivot. So I started in the performing arts. I'm a violinist and a singer and an actor. And I performed all over the world doing theater and performing as a singer and as a violinist. And I really loved that. And I realized one day that I could affect and help so many more people if I expanded what I did into the non-performing arts world. So I've learned how to be expressive and to be dynamic and to listen and to how to use my body and how to use my voice and to be concise and clear. And all these things I realized are things that people in the business world really need more of. People in education need that. And so I started to talk to some people and I got involved in the healthcare field. And then I transitioned to the corporate world where I started to coach people on becoming more dynamic and more concise and to be better storytellers and to also just handle difficult situations and interpersonal issues with, you know, being better listeners and knowing how to respond more concisely.
Yeah, that's great. And so now that you know, have been working and pivoting into the space where you're helping people, what are some of the typical challenges that you're seeing people have as it relates to presenting and just putting their best foot forward when they meet people?
I think the first thing is confidence. We are the most confident when we're with people that we know and who know us. And that is the challenge with business. Oftentimes, they're people who are new to us or who we might have a power dynamic with. And so confidence is first being aware of what you have to offer as a whole person and bringing that to the table, not just, oh, this is my experience in this field, but bringing all of yourself. Things are being concise and connecting to your message so that you're not just talking like this all the time and very boring, but you're speaking dynamically and with energy.
Yeah. I think those two things, you know, initially you mentioned confidence and, you know, business development, and it's not something lawyers are trained for in law school or, you know, they kind of pick it up on their own, or maybe they have a mentor, but, you know, they can be very confident in a courtroom. But when it comes to meeting with a new general counsel or a new prospective client, the confidence may not, you know, be there right from the get-go. So what are a couple of things that you work with them on to develop that confidence?
I think the first thing is helping them to focus on the other person in the room. It's the self-focus that gets in our way. The little messages that we hear in our heads while we're in a conversation with someone means that we're actually not in the now. We're not being present. And the more I can focus on you, for example, and really listen to you and be interested in you, then I'm not focusing on myself. And the anxiety immediately drops.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going on in a lot of cases, that they're thinking about the big pitch. They're thinking about how they're going to present a reason to engage. And what they're forgetting is, as you mentioned, being present, but also, you know, being prepared with questions and being prepared to, you know, listen and be in the moment, to your point, and how do we react without having to think about what we're going to say next, right? Always thinking about, what am I going to say next? What am I going to say next?
Right. So, and really that again is being in your head, right? Yeah. Instead of listening. I think also just slowing down.
Yeah.
And being the king or the queen of your thoughts is really helpful. Just slow down.
Yeah. I think we all need to do that. What about the concise part? I mean, you mentioned that are people just too wordy? Are people just dragging things out?
Both. I think it's also that we think we have to fill all the time with speech instead of using pause. We use fillers, just, and they all take away from my message and from the power of my message and from someone's confidence in me, because I start to look a little junior or sound a little junior. So taking away those fillers and then knowing exactly, you know, what those questions might be, and then having a structure. Do I know what my main thought is? Do I know why I'm saying what I'm saying? Having those answers, I think, help a lot. And then knowing what the main points are to what my message is.
Well, right. And I think one of the things that I work on every day with lawyers is breaking things down into a process, you know, because we can follow steps, right? We all can follow steps, whether it's a recipe or it's you're a musician, right? You can't go to the third note. You've got to hit the first note. Right. And so the process of how am I prepared to ask questions and build relationship? And then maybe step two is, how do I set an agenda or a game plan for the meeting so that I can control it with them feeling like they're in control, for example.
Right.
And then what is what I call discovery, but what's the questioning? What are the questions I want to ask? And where are those questions supposed to lead?
Right.
And so being not only prepared as an expert in your area, but I think also having a process to follow takes away a lot of the guessing and a lot of the filler that might happen in a meeting where it might be unnecessary.
Right. And I think knowing your audience and doing the homework, asking who are they, what is their opinion of you, of your, you know, of your presentation, and what is their background, having those answers ahead of time really helps to take some of the guesswork out, so that you're not giving them information that they don't need, or that you know their presumptions or assumptions.
And I know that you are big into, you know, body language and just reading people. You mentioned being in the moment, but reading people as you're engaging them, not only how you're coming across, but also watching their body and watching their eyes and their face. And, and what are some things that you usually, you know, consult your clients on in relation to nonverbal?
So first of all, when it comes to virtually, because that is our world right now, I try to counsel them in having a really clean but interesting background. And I try to, most importantly, get them to speak so that their eyes are looking into the lens. So even though our listeners can't see that, I know that you can see that when I look at you through the lens, it looks like I'm looking directly into your eyes, versus if I look at your image, it looks like I'm, yeah, you see it now, you're shaking your head. Yes.
Yeah.
It's such a difference. And it takes a little training, but when you're saying something important or want to make sure that the other person knows that you're present, looking into that lens makes such a huge difference.
And I have to tell you, from, you know, you taught me that, and I've been doing much, even though I occasionally stray, I've been doing that much more with my clients and with the people I'm talking with. And it's just, it, it's disappointing though that they don't do it back. So I'm looking at, they're seeing my eyes look right at them, but then they're looking down, you know, in the middle of the screen. And so, right. you know, it's a one, it seems like a one way, right. one way right. street.
Well, but, and you can pass on the knowledge.
Well, I am. I mean, I am, you know, trying to teach my clients that and instructing them, but to, you know, again, it's tricky. But I think that's really important. So any other tips on, for example, the virtual meeting? Cause now that you're on the topic of virtual meetings, we can't stop. What other things? So, all right, looking in the camera, give us a couple other gems that you're working on.
Sure. So I think in meetings, for one, I think because there are so many, they tend to last too long. So I think shortening meetings, if possible, is really terrific. I think also getting away from too many slides is a great idea, because as soon as you put up a slide, all of the people in the meeting are going to be looking at the slide and they're not going to be listening to you.
Yeah.
It's just the way it goes. So in my opinion, put the slide up only if necessary. And as soon as you've hit what is on the slide and it should only be what you're saying, not anything more, get away from it.
And so do you like take it? So you're screen sharing, obviously, for that. Do you then unscreen share and just kind of go back and forth so that, yep. again, you're taking control of the.
Exactly. Yeah. Because the trust and if you're trying to sell an idea, it's you. It's your person. It's the why you're doing something. It's not the what, really. It's, you know, I've said this before to some folks, that people don't buy what you do. They buy why you do it. And you can't sell that convincingly with a slide as much as you can with your voice and who you are.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I actually had a speaker talk to a group of mine not that long ago, and he just totally captured them and captured their attention. And yeah, he's got an amazing background and everything else, but he didn't need any slides, and they didn't want slides. They just wanted to hear him tell stories and hear him share his experiences. And he was very authentic and creative and engaging. And that blew the roof off of any slides he could have put up.
Right. Right. And having the content is important, but that can be shared aside or right. something, you know, but that should never be the bulk of the meeting. You're going to put your audience asleep for one.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And we want to make sure that we're staying engaged. And again, if someone's on 7, 8, 9, whatever Zoom meetings a day, you know, and you're the last, heaven forbid, and they're not engaged, they're just about to fry their brain. You know, that you have to step up and really make sure you're connecting with them. And it could be the difference between getting the business or not getting the business.
Right. Right. And that means more energy and more enthusiasm, even more than you would think. Especially over Zoom, because you're two-dimensional and you just have to go above and beyond.
Right. Any other thoughts or things that you provide as far as information on Zoom? I think you've given us a couple of good nuggets. Just want to make sure we're not missing something.
I think also getting people to participate is really helpful, making the meeting collaborative.
Yeah.
Sharing control of your, if you are going to share a PowerPoint or a screen, sharing control of it so people can make a, you know, adjustments to it, having polls, anything, calling on people so that you get people talking, saying, you know, in 5 minutes, I'm going to ask everybody X, so that people stand up and go, oh, I got to pay attention. The participation is really important in Zoom. So it's not just one person talking the whole time.
Yeah. That's really great. Again, I think that these are the kinds of things that could be game changers as it relates to how people are really not only connecting, but also making sure that they're, you know, not seeing people fade off and start, you know, multitasking, because that's what's right. going on. A lot of people looking down and,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
My 13-year-old is in an office behind me in school, and, you know, he's got ADHD like the rest of us. And, you know, but I just imagine, like, what is it like for him to be just listening to teachers go on and on all day with that, you know, but hopefully they're right. getting trained on how they interact.
Well, they're not as much as you might think.
I think they're kind of figuring that out on their own to some degree.
Yeah, sadly. But also, you know, a lot of meetings, I've heard some of my clients say that their clients won't put the video on, and that allows people to multitask. So asking others, hey, can we put the video on so that we can have the best listening and communicating experience possible is a fine request to make.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. So let me ask you, because, you know, outside of Zoom, you do a lot of, you know, trainings on presentation skills for, we're going to be going back live, right? And getting back in front of people. Mm-hmm. Are there particular things that you teach your clients on as it relates to presenting to a large room of people? Is that different than a small group of people? And what are some things that you usually walk them through?
I think the size of the audience is not such a big game changer. If you have amplification, then you don't have to worry as much about the power of your voice. But when I am talking to in a room that's at least, you know, 20 by 20, I'm going to speak with more volume. I'm going to speak slower. I'm going to enunciate more. I think eye contact is also really important. It's easy to scan a room, just look all over the place when we're speaking. And it's much more effective to speak one word one person, one thought, one person, one thought, or a group of people, one thought, a group of people, one thought, so that you're not just looking all over the place. It increases your ability to hold your ground, and it also increases others' confidence in you. So because it looks like you're really focusing on them when you take the time, it also slows you down. And that's what we do when we're anxious, we speed.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see that and have done that. And so I think the other piece is, going back to this again, is just, you know, being really prepared. I think, you know, when I present all the time, and when it's a newer subject for me, I do need to slow down, and it sometimes I can, you know, go off on a tangent, but with things that I know really well, like I've presented 5, 10, 20 times on in different capacities, you know, it always comes off really, really well.
Right. Well, of course, the more comfortable you are with your material, the more practice you've had. But if you've not had practice presenting in a room that's bigger or not that amount of people, you've got to practice it somehow. Get into a big room and just imagine there being all kinds of people and do it. Do it 5 times.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Use gestures, you know.
Yeah. That's exactly. And I think people, you know, really, I mean, they haven't been through any kind of training, most people, of how to present effectively. So they go out and they present and they, you know, read their slides, or they don't enunciate, or they don't use their hands to communicate a point. They don't use the nonverbal. And I think it's a real misstep, because the difference between a good speaker and an okay speaker is the difference between getting business or having people line up to talk to you when you're done at a conference, for example, or people just leaving the room and going next.
Right. I think another little tip is to start strongly. Start with a story, or start with a vision, or start with something that grabs attention, or that is surprising, something humorous, anything that's unusual and exciting, I think is a great way to start a meeting that has lots of people.
Nice. Well, since you mentioned unusual or different, I was thinking, I normally ask this, or sometimes ask this at the beginning of my show, but we're kind of coming towards the end. And I wanted to say, was there something unusual, interesting, or different about you that most people don't know about either your background or something that you're open to sharing?
Sure. What should I choose?
Put you on the spot a little bit.
No, I have so many to choose from. I will tell you that I have practiced flying trapeze.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. So like up in the air, 50 feet
up
in the air.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my God.
There's a school up on the north side of Chicago, and I have taken many, 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 many classes, and it's not doing in session right now, but I absolutely adore it. It's the closest to flying, I think, mm-hmm. that I've been. And I've done skydiving, I've done ultralight, I've done hang gliding, I've done it all.
Yeah.
But the flying trapeze is something totally different and takes a lot of strength.
So when you let go that first time and release from the trapeze to go to the other one, what does that feel like?
it's a great feeling. Remember, we are on cables.
Okay. So okay.
Not, right. And there's a net. But for me, really, I'm focused on wanting to do, they call it the trick, wanting to do it well and successfully so that the person can catch me. And if my timing is just off because my technique is off, then I miss the catch. And that's always, darn it.
And then you're hanging from the line saying, what if?
No, they let you go with the cables and you just gently fall you fall into the net.
Okay. Well, that is very interesting. Yeah. You've got quite a background in the performing arts between acting and singing and violin and doing commercials and really set you up well to be a coach and a consultant for lawyers, for people that are looking to take their presentations to the next step, next level. And I appreciate you taking some time to kind of share your best practices with my audience.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Stephen. It's so good to see you again.
It is good to see you as well. And again, I hope you know, we can get together face to face soon and do some networking and, you know, get you back in front of some clients of mine soon as well.
Awesome. That sounds great.
Yeah. Hey, listen, everybody, I just want to also thank you for spending some time with Regina and I today. And again, the goal is to continue to provide value for you in learning business development, marketing, branding, et cetera. And really, you know, be that lawyer, someone who is confident, organized, and a skilled rainmaker. I hope all take care and stay safe. Be well.
Thanks for listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Visit Steve's website, Fretson.com, for additional information and to stay up to date on the latest legal business development and marketing trends. For more information and important links about today's episode, check out today's show notes.